It's time for Twig This Week in Google. We're just coming off the Big Apple announcement. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll also talk about privacy issues with the Google self-driving cars, what the former First Lady of Germany thinks about autocomplete, and why Google thinks I'm a douche. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 163, recorded September 12th, 2012. Jeff in a dress. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford. Ford invites tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. And we will Googleize with our regular googly eyes, starting with on my left, Ms. Gina Trapani of smarterware.org, founding editor of Life Hacker and a hacker herself. Good to see you, Gina.
Good to see you, too. I'm sorry that we started late, but it gave me enough time to download the Xcode Goldmaster.
So oh, yes. The iOS 6 Goldmaster is out.
Yep.
So do you put it on something?
I just install it on my Mac.
But yeah, you don't.
Do I burn it to a disk?
Well, but you don't put it on your iPhone or iPad.
I haven't yet. No. I didn't install the iOS 6 beta, but now I will because I want to test my app on iOS 6.
Yeah, and you'll be ahead of all the other cool kids who don't get theirs till Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also with us, cool kid himself, Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism at City University of New York. Hello, Jeff Jarvis.
Hey.
JJ, author of Public Parts. And what would Google do?
So are you completely appled out, Leo?
I am so appled out, but I will allow you both rebuttal. A minute of rebuttal. Are you excited? So Apple today, if you're just tuning in, if you've been in the woods, announced the new iPhone, iPhone 5. You know, it's funny. I walked around amongst normal people before the announcement, and I did not detect a heightened sense of liveliness, awareness, and excitement. I don't think most people know that this announcement's going on. Apple fans know that it's going on.
It was one of their incremental updates, right?
But it's not supposed to be.
No, it's not supposed to be.
It's because it's TikTok, right? And so iPhone 4 was big. Going from the 3GS to the 4, huge. Looks different. Everything. iPhone 4S looks exactly the same, just software stuff. So that was supposedly the talk. Now we need a tick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. So this was supposed to be a big one.
But it's big. I mean, the screen is tall. Is a row of icons taller, 9 millimeters taller.
Yeah, 4 inches, right?
Yeah, it's a 4-inch screen.
Instead of 3.5.
Yeah.
Another row icons.
Metal back. Bezel is drilled by diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
It's an 8-megapixel camera still, but it's now got a sapphire lens, movable insides. It's got infrared.
Apple can now exploit African miners as well Asian factory workers.
I didn't want to talk about this on the Apple event because I hate to be the turd in the punch bowl, if for want of a better
you get a cold one if you say anything
phrase. I didn't want to be the guy who brings everybody down, but did you see the article in the Shanghai Evening Post? They got a reporter into the Foxconn factory. Now remember, we talked a lot about Mike
Daisy.
Yeah,
Daisy.
And unfortunately, he tarnished what he was saying by making up facts. So, but the story was substantively accurate, which was that the workers at Foxconn, the people who are making not just this gadget, but every one of these gadgets in our little life, not just Apple, but everybody, they're all made in China by labor that is not enjoying the best conditions. So this was a Chinese reporter for a Chinese news agency. Who went in undercover. This is good reporting, Jeff. I think you'll agree.
Yeah.
To the Foxconn factory, pretended to be a new worker on the iPhone 5. He worked there for 10 days. He did a diary. back in March, the factory needed 20,000 more workers to work on the iPhone 5. So they started this in March. They do 57 million phones a year for Apple. He could only take it for 10 days. He talked about the recruitment, pretty straightforward. He was asked 30 questions for his mental health, yes or no questions. One of them, have you gotten to a state of mental trance recently? Remember, they had a problem with suicides there. This is pictures of the dormitory. Not too beautiful, not too elegant. He said the whole dormitory smells like garbage when I walked in. It's a mixture of overnight garbage smell plus dirty sweat and foam. I don't know what that smells like. Outside, every room fully piled up with uncleared trash, cockroaches in the cupboard. The bed sheets are full of dirt and ashes. Then he's asked to sign a contract to say that he's encouraged by managers to tick no before he even goes in to say that he didn't hear any noise pollution or toxic pollution before he even goes in. His job was to put oil dots on the back. I mean, this, if you read this, you might have some second thoughts about buying not just your iPhone, but your gadget of any kind.
Bookend that with what happens to them when you throw them out.
I mean, this is where we want to see Apple innovate, right? I mean, I love the Johnny Ive video against the white background where he says aluminium, and we get to see like beautiful corners.
It sounds clean, ground. Doesn't it?
It's, I mean, it's amazing, right? But I would love to see Apple start to innovate here. How do we manufacture these things without recruiting students out of universities? That was another story. I think that was also Shanghai Daily, and make these conditions better. And I would just like to see them talk about that in there. You know, they've made a lot of great strides environmentally, right? I would like to see them sort of address this kind of thing in there.
This guy had to mark 4 points with paint on an iPhone back. This is all he did. He had to do 5 a minute. He worked 10 hours, 3,000 iPhone 5 backplates. There are 4 production lines doing just that, 12 workers in every line producing 36,000 iPhone backplates in half a day. I mean, mind-numbing work. And by the way, he did 2 extra hours of overtime for $4. So just, I mean, look, I'm not, I'm probably going to continue to buy the gadgets I buy, but it's...
No, there's responsibility. We've seen this movement with food. One of my students, a woman named Jenny Avens, has something called Closet Tour, where she looks at the same considerations with fashion and the story behind what you get. And certainly getting the story behind the technology is important as well. And Mike Daisy did poison that well, but it's a well, that needs attention. And I think you're right, Gene. Well, I hope you're right, Gene. I hope that people would care enough if it becomes a differentiator, especially since you're paying a premium for Apple, by the way, and a rather considerable premium, that you can get that. Because I really think my takeaway from today was just that smartphones were now as boring as phones became. And so there's not a lot new to be done. There'll be some new features. There'll be some new stuff, and that's fine. But it reminds me of the old days when we used to be excited when GM announced its new lineup of cars, and now who cares? Or when NBC announced its new shows, now who cares? Oh, so Apple announces a new phone. Who cares? It's become commodity. And I think, that's the interesting thing to me. And so can you differentiate your phone in part by its virtue? We'll see if anybody tries to.
I'd love it if Apple. Well, you know who did? Google did. Remember, they made a big deal about the Q.
Yeah. About the Q, which was just an unfortunate product to make the point with.
But it was made in the U.S. of A.
I mean, wouldn't you love to see an Apple keynote where they said, and these were all made in the USA? Oh. I mean,
I would not make the choice based on features or benefits. I would take the Samsung Galaxy S3, put it aside, and buy only iPhones if they did that.
You know, no, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to disagree because I think we go a little too far with that, with USA jingoism. And I don't want to unemploy a whole bunch of people in China. I just want them to be employed decently.
Well, maybe that's the solution, is to say, okay, we're going to continue to make them in China. But see, this is what Apple says they're doing, and that's the problem, is they say, but we're going to have standards, we're going to really insist on them, and we're going to go out there, we're going to step forward. And again, I'm not picking on Apple, because every product we buy from any company that's made in China is probably made in conditions exactly like
And anyone
like
can
this.
Complain about their jobs, exactly right, Leo, or probably conditions that are worse. In fact, I would bet there are conditions that are worse than Apple.
Yeah.
And so, you know, is that relativism work or not? And certainly we saw stories, people complaining about their jobs at Amazon warehouses, which are not pleasant places. And I certainly have a more pleasant job. Look at what my surroundings. You know, jobs can be difficult. And I think we have to realize that and realize a little bit of the context. Nonetheless, I think Gina's point is to make better conditions a goal and a differentiator and a marketing position would be a wonderful thing.
Yes, huge opportunity. And by the way, the studies have shown it doesn't add significantly to the cost of the device. No. We're talking $40 to an iPhone. I know people are very price sensitive, but I'd pay $40 more to know that the workers were well taken care of. Moving on. Germany, I'm just going to say this because it's just going to make Jeff so happy.
What have they done now?
Germany's first lady, former first lady, Bettina Wolf. I guess there were lots of rumors about Ms. Wolf having a different career before she married the former German president, Christian Wolf.
A career of long standing, one might call it.
Yes, one of the oldest professions. So when you autocomplete, when you do a search for her and you type autocomplete, terms like escort and prostitute come out. And she's mad at Google for that, and she's suing them for defamation.
Right.
Right, because people are writing about this.
Yes.
Exactly. And so that's the data, which I'm ready to go, you know, make fun of it for and defend Google. And then Google turned around, and there's another story in there, I think it's in there, that they have they're not so quick to autocomplete for pirated sites now.
Right.
Yes.
So if Google does change for one reason and then doesn't change for the other, it violates its, algorithmic purity here.
And they've been sued in Italy and Japan and lost in both cases and had to change how autocomplete works. It's just a shame because you and I and everybody listening to this show knows that autocomplete has nothing to do with Google. It's because that's what people are typing in.
It's the people. Well, you know, this whole story about, and I'm going to forget who said it suddenly. Zeynep said this, that we in America don't see that absolute freedom of speech is not something shared around the world. And she's not saying that judgmentally at all. She's from Turkey. And what she's trying to explain to people is that in other countries, hate speech, negative speech is regulated, is forbidden, is punished. And so when it isn't here, this in the context of the horribly cheesy, ridiculous video that supposedly caused what happened in Egypt and Libya. So when that's not controlled here, there's a presumption in other countries or the ability to paint it as if it's approved speech. And I think that's a little bit of a cultural shift to explain. I still will defend absolute free speech and sell absolute free speech to anyone, and I'm not justifying anything that's come out of that. But I think that comes in some of this legislation that happens as well. This is not good, so clearly you should stop this. It shouldn't go through you. Well, but there's implications of that we should know better.
Well, yeah, and that's the of course, the first thing that comes to my mind is they just don't understand how it's working. And maybe if somebody explained, well, this is automatic, Ms. Wolf. This is not – Google's not doing this. This is part of autocomplete. But I don't get the sense that she would understand. Maybe she does understand that. She still wants him to stop.
Yeah.
And what does Google do?
You know, Google's in this. I'll go back to the video again. Google blocked that infamous video in Egypt and Libya. It defended the video being online, said the video, which if anybody has watched it, it is the cheesiest, most ridiculously, obviously stupid thing you could ever imagine, horribly done to piss people off.
Done intentionally to provoke, yeah.
Right. Well, they did. And just you know, I would say laughably ridiculous, but nothing's laughable about the situation now. It's tragic. But Google said this meets our standards. It's staying on YouTube. But they blocked it in Egypt and Libya. And meanwhile, Afghanistan blocked YouTube in total. And so, you know, I don't know whether.
I don't know if there's an easier. I don't know what the easy answer is.
What would you do about Egypt and Libya if you were Google?
I don't know. I mean, when we talked about China early in the early days of This Week in Google, I think we agreed that a company has to, if you're going to do business in a country, you have to abide by the country's laws. And Yahoo and Google don't have Nazi memorabilia. eBay doesn't have Nazi memorabilia in Germany for sale.
They follow the local law.
They follow the law of the land that they are in. And so either, and Google made the right choice, which is to say, well, then that would, guys, we're not going to do business in China. But
you can censor us, but we will not censor ourselves.
Right.
They said in China, however, it is a bit hypocritical given what they do censor in Germany.
But then they open up all of these problems by when I type the Pirate Bay into autocomplete, I get the pirate movie, the Pirates of Penzance, the pirate. I don't get Pirate Bay.
E-bag.
Yeah.
Because they demote sites that they've deemed the primary purpose is to provide.
And modify autocomplete.
Right, they modify autocomplete.
So they're saying, we can do it.
What do you think, Gina?
Well, I mean, if in Germany it's true that, you know, saying that this woman was a prostitute at some point is illegal, that's not protected speech. Is that what you're saying, Jeff?
No, what I'm saying is culturally, what Zainab says is that just culturally, the presumption is that because hate speech is regulated, if you haven't regulated it, you're approving it. Whereas we say in America, of course, is no. All speech, including noxious speech, is protected. So that all speech is protected.
Right. So because this autocomplete suggestion comes up in Germany, it seems as if Google is approving or publishing this information, which is inaccurate. So she's saying this is inaccurate. You shouldn't show it. It's on you to take it down. I mean, it's tough. I do agree that if you're going to do business in a country, you should sort of abide by their laws. And if this is defamation, I mean, I don't know if German law considers this defamation. Then Google probably.
But
has
who's
to
doing the defaming? It's autocomplete.
That's the problem. It's the crowd. And if something goes through you, so should every newsstand be arrested for something that's carry, or every bookstore that's being arrested for carrying something? Haven't we been there before?
Well, that's a little different. Right. What if hate speech goes on a telephone? Do you blame the phone company?
Exactly. No, that's one point. Yeah. Now this story is a little more complicated because this ex-president got into a whole kerfuffle and. Tried to call and did call and left a message for the guy I know, Kai Diekmann, who's the editor of Bild, the biggest paper in Europe. And it became a whole big hoo-ha that basically ruined his career. So that's been going on. And he's kind of tender. And then meanwhile, this is happening too.
There's a little cultural background there we missed. Yeah.
Kai Diekmann, by the way, just as an aside, Kai is the editor of this largest paper. It's very, tabloidy. And he and the top two executives from Axel Springer, a huge publisher in Germany, just moved to Palo Alto for 6 months to a year.
To get out of Germany?
to get into the land of innovation.
Oh, okay.
They're going to keep their jobs and just soak in innovation.
So Google is not admitting to changing its autocomplete,
would that just be because if they downgraded the sites in search, would that also potentially automatically affect autocomplete, you think?
I mean, it should, right? I mean, that's what's presumably going on with Pirate Bay, right? The Pirate Bay is not showing up high in search results because they're weighting it because they've deemed it a site that's, there to provide.
According to Torrent Freak, as recently as January 2011, if you typed the THE /P into Google, you'd immediately get the Pirate Bay. Not anymore.
And so if you complete the search, does the Pirate Bay come up in?
No.
In the results.
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. Let's go to Google.
I think that autocomplete suggests, what you're probably going to get. No, I'm wrong. The Pirate Bay, if I search for the Pirate Bay, it's the first site that I get back.
Well, I'm getting stories about the Pirate Bay. Yeah, no, you're right. There it is. So it's still number one result for the Pirate Bay.
Right. So they're not suggesting that you go there. This is interesting. It's not an easy answer. It really isn't an easy answer.
Well, there's a risk, though. As soon as you do start censoring, then you're saying, not only can we, but we are no longer a carrier. We don't have that safe harbor.
Right.
Well, expected to be. I mean, you've got to have a rule set that you live by.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know what Google does. I really
don't. They do censor some words. I'm trying to remember. When they first launched this quick suggest, Irina Slutsky? Slutsky is her last name?
Yeah, Irina Slutsky.
She said, hey, I just tried it, and it's not suggesting anything for my name because that was one of the words.
It's got the word slut in it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely some editorial going on here. There's some filtering going on. But how far do you take it, and for what reasons?
Oh, so difficult.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go. You started on a little late German story, and we went all off.
No, I knew we would. That's why I baited you. No, I completely knew we would. That's why I brought it up.
While we got crazy things in Europe, what was the other story from the Netherlands where a court said that if you a site that had linked to a Playboy photo of a naked celebrity, just by linking to that, this big site kind of, I think, grudge-like, violated both copyright and privacy.
Pick one.
Right. We get to that point where you cannot even link to something, where everyone becomes responsible for the legality of what they link to. Just think about it for 2 seconds. But this is an architectural issue people don't know what to do with.
And I keep thinking it's just that they don't understand the technology, but maybe it isn't.
I think you're right. Well, maybe not. It's just kind of, this is the way the world should work. We want it to work this way. And I keep on coming back to this idea of standing on principles. You've got to have principles. This is going to sound terribly American exceptionalism, and I don't mean it this way, but I think part of it is not just that we have this view here of free speech as an absolute. I think that the Bill of Rights as an architecture, the idea of having principles, and the Constitution obviously, having principles, and that you constantly check back to those principles rather than having what many nations do have, which is a constantly evolving life, a breeding set of laws that become the nation's legal view. Maybe that's part of the difference, too. I don't know.
Should Google tell this former first lady what articles are so high ranking that mention prostitute and her name in them? Should they reveal that to her so that she can go after those individual websites?
Well, there you're into Twitter land, aren't you? Where Twitter is being told by the judge that it has to hand over the tweets of users. So Google in that case would be handing over data that isn't necessarily public, diming those sites.
Well, and, I mean, she could probably just do the search and see the articles. She could see the sites that are coming up.
So autocomplete is not reflecting what people are searching for. It's reflecting what your results will be when you do that search.
I think it's probably both.
Yeah, Gina, the other problem with this is what if let's say it's not her. What if someone else, if a politician, you come up with, Joe Schmo thief. And in fact, the guy is a thief. It's not up to Google to adjudicate the truth or falsity of accusations.
Right, right.
That's
so
accused, they're being expected to censor, but then to have to adjudicate on top of that so they can judge whether to censor, impossibility.
Right, and Leo's point was a good one. People are issuing this query, even if there are no articles, it still could show up in the autocomplete as well. You know, one of the first autocomplete suggestion when you search for my name is divorce, and I'm not divorced, and I think that's because I posted a Flickr photo and said something about divorce in the title. So it's funny. It doesn't bother me because, whatever, who cares?
See, I always thought it was more what people were searching for than results. But I don't know, because when I type Leo Laporte as I get jerk, douche,
right,
idiot,
and those are probably things
gay.
That other said, yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of sites with jerk, douche, idiot, gay. Maybe there are. I get. I don't know where that comes from. Actually,
well, you only get
I'm going to sue Google. Gosh darn it!
You only get that if you say is
right.
If I say Jeff Jarvis, I get Twitter CUNY bio.
No. It's only if you say is.
Right. So that's sentences that have is in them. Is an idiot. Is a twit. Is wrong. Is a moron.
Ah.
I think douche wins.
Well, wait a minute, though. Let me just see. I'll click that link because that's going to show me all the results.
Blows up at Michael Arrington. That's good.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure, really.
If you do it in quotes, you'll see the.
I'll see the actual results.
You'll see the pages that have exactly that sentence.
Ah, see, that probably narrows it down because it could. Exactly.
Call
right.
Michael Arrington a douche, but you got to.
I don't think I use that. I don't like that word. I don't think I use that.
No, I don't think much either.
No, it's mostly people calling me a douche, actually. Okay, moving on.
We haven't Googled ourselves in a while on the show. It's a tradition.
It's a tradition. Consumer watchdog urges California's Governor Brown, to veto Google's driverless car bill because of privacy protection.
We got our dumb legislators, too. But they're all in California. No, they're not.
In a Consumer Watchdog Privacy Project Director John Simpson said the Senate Bill 1298 is completely insufficient. It gives the user no control over what data will be gathered and how much information will be used. This is the law regulating autonomous vehicles. And he says this law must provide that driverless cars gather only the data necessary to operate the vehicle and retain that data only as long as necessary for the vehicle's operation. What?
It's everything that has technology associated with it becomes cooties. There was a story.
That's what it is. It's because it's technology, so technology. It must be stealing our information.
Right. Whereas there was a story in the Times last week in New York about restaurants and all the things they know about you and want to know about you. So that when Mr. Laporte comes in, we want to seat him at this kind of table.
Fine.
And he likes his gin with only two ice cubes, right? And if you, but
get
you take
that foie gras on the stove right away.
If you replace the word Google for restaurant in it, oh my God, there'd be laws.
Mm-hmm. So the consumer watchdog says there's two reasons why Google won't endorse privacy protections for its self-driving cars. First, Google's entire business model is based on building digital dossiers about our behavior and using them to sell the most advertising.
Yeah, well, that's okay. That's a good business.
You are not Google's customer. You are its product. The one it sells to corporations willing to pay any price to reach you. Will the driverless technology just be about getting us from point to point or about tracking how we got there and what we did along the way?
No, it's going to imprison you in your car and it's going to drive you to Walmart and it's not going to let you leave until it buys what Google wants you to buy.
Or maybe you say, drive me to Target and it drives you to Walmart instead because they paid more.
Right.
Mm.
Aha.
Second, computer engineers who believe that more data is always better are in charge at Google. They may not know what they'd use the data for today, but they think they may someday find a use for it, and they don't want any restrictions on them now. Actually, neither of those are, strictly speaking, false.
They are. I'm going to play devil's advocate, okay? Because somebody has to say it. If there's the point that they're making, there's no way to opt out of marketing advertisements or sharing data as you drive. And that the consumer should have the opportunity to opt out if they wanted to. Now, I understand that the deal is that you use this technology, like in return for using this technology, for getting this great convenience, you're giving your data, right? We've had this conversation. It's just like club cards and, you know, all the other things. But it would be nice, some people would say, if you could opt out and say, I'll pay for not sharing my data. I'll pay with money instead of paying with my data. Does that seem unreasonable?
I don't think I've seen any business plans that actually have Google using marketing in this, though you're right. I can well see them doing that.
That's kind of what they're saying is they may not know now, but they'll just save it just in case because they'll fuck
it. They may.
Yeah.
But B, you're going to know what the deal is. And you can opt out of having a self-driving car.
So this is the amendment that the author of the legislation proposed. The manufacturer of the autonomous technology installed in a vehicle shall provide a written disclosure to the purchaser of an autonomous vehicle that describes what information is collected by the autonomous technology equipped on the vehicle. The consumer watchdog said that is completely inadequate.
I think that's a perfectly good rule all around.
Now, what they're saying, though, and I do support this, is they have a concept, privacy by design. It means privacy issues are considered from the very beginning and the solutions are baked in. The point being that if you try to catch up after a new technology is widely adopted, it's, you know, it's kind of a done deal. And maybe that's what we've seen on the internet. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, to an extent. But I sat in a meeting at the whatever the name of the group I'm supposedly a member of about privacy, and they talked about this. And the problem is they just think about privacy. They don't think about the actual use of it first. So it's not design by design, right? It's right. Let's make sure that at every possible stop, we're going to put in a stop here. We're going to put a box you tick off. We're going to put all this other stuff. And we're not going to sit down and say, well, why does somebody want this? And it's my favorite example of this is that a Google priority inbox. Google is reading your mail and it's okay with you and you know what the trade-off is and it's fine. If this same attitude came to that, every time you open an email, it would say, is it okay if I read this? Is it okay if I read that? No, it's just okay.
I guess if your job title is privacy watchdog, this is what you do.
This is and this is exactly yeah. This was Howard Stern's point always about the people who went after him. There are these organizations that anoint themselves our protectors with probably two members and a big mailing list and a nice bank account.
Yeah.
But don't you think the EFF would say something similar though?
I don't think they'd be this stupid.
Well,
I think they would be more nuanced. In okay. trying to investigate and trying to do what you just did, Gina, which is to say, how could this be used? Let's think that through. And if there's any dangers, let's warn of them. Instead, this is a blanket. If you have any data on me, you're clearly going to use it for bad and horrible purposes. There's been not a word of Google using self-driving cars in a marketing sense or what this data might go to. And so they're allowing them to be on the road so that Google can test them and regulate their safety. But they're not even for sale. So there's
It's not unreasonable, though, to think that that's Google's business model, that they might...
I mean, they're an advertising company.
If we regulate every potential behavior, every potential behavior... We'll tie ourselves in knots.
Right. It kills innovation if you're constantly...
Okay. Right. Google could also use it as a taxi service and could rip off people. And there are laws about how taxis operate. Right. And
they could be using it for escorts and prostitution. Let's put that in there.
Germany.
Right.
And pick up... no, sorry. try to tie it together. Stop. I didn't mean it, Germany. My book's on sale right now, so I want to say nice things. So trying to regulate to potential uses is the problem where we are. And we always get to this problem. What they're doing is trying to regulate the technology versus the behavior.
Right.
The privacy laws are already there that if you use data in bad ways, no matter how you got it, whether it was from Facebook or from a car, the laws are there to establish it.
Let's do that. Let's have good privacy laws that don't talk about any specific application, but just let's do that. I could go for that.
That's what it should be. That's what it is, basically. We already have privacy laws. We already have copyright laws. We already have these laws. We don't need a whole mess of new laws for technology, except from showboating associations that want to raise money and legislators that also want to raise money.
It does feel like a lot of it's scare tactics, like, oh, here they go again. They're going to steal our information. In fact, they do in this press release. I was reading their press release. They do bring up, they call it the Y Spy incident. The Google cars, the Google Street View cars that were accidentally gathering Wi-Fi. The Y Spy, as if Google had some nefarious plan. And actually, they do have a nefarious plan. Sergey Brin and Diane von Furstenberg.
Fashion Week is their nefarious plan.
This is how you get people to wear Google glasses.
This is nefarious plan is trying to convince you that those glasses do not look weird.
They look weird. I don't care if Diane von Furstenberg's wearing them or her models are where they look weird. Here she is with Sergey Brin at Fashion Week. And they both look like complete dorks.
They're going to make a video out of the product of the glasses next week.
Really?
Which also occurred to me, Leo. Come the next Apple event, people happen to be just wearing their Google glasses.
Yeah. Apple's going to throw them out. They're going to say, turn off your glasses.
Isn't that going to be interesting?
And you won't be allowed to wear them into a dressing room or a bathroom or a gym. I don't think this makes these look good. I don't understand even what Diane von Furstenberg's up to here. The glasses, by the way, match the outfit, notice.
It does look pretty silly.
I don't look so dorky.
It looks weird. I wonder if Apple's going to make glass jammers.
One of them did a dialogue with to the model. Walk 25 steps, stop, turn right, turn around, walk 25 steps, reach your destination.
Turn left, turn right.
It said that it looked like Sergey had a cocktail straw sticking out of his head.
It does. I'm sorry. You can't make that look not dorky, but it's fine. Oh, come on.
Oh, my God. Sarah Jessica Parker. Oh, that's perfect.
Oh, come on.
Okay. But
either way, I did not know that Diane von Furstenberg was married to Barry Diller.
Yeah.
Now it's all coming together. He's the guy who's putting the little tiny antennas, the Aereo antennas, out. Google is going to... Yeah, that's good. It's good. No, let's see. Let's see some high fashion...
Looks better now.
Attractive women wearing...
No,
that's the picture right there. That is the picture right there. A beautiful woman in an interesting couture gown. What does that pair of glasses say to you?
Google Schmutz's beauty.
I am cyborg. A Borg. I'm a cyber. I'm ready for my close-up in Battlestar Galactica.
It makes one eye look like weird.
It's glowing.
And broken.
Yes, because the light is shining there. See, that's the...
Well, this so has to be in Big Bang Theory this season. Please, please.
Yes.
Oh, they should do a whole episode just on
Sheldon making his own Google glasses. He can't get them, so he makes his own, and they're a little bit larger. Little bit less stylish. Google is making this. Look for Boingo. I almost said Oingo Boingo. Look for Boingo Wi-Fi hotspots free across the U.S. this month.
Unless
you're using iOS or Windows Phone. What?
So I could have sworn that I was in a New York City subway stop that has this free Wi-Fi hotspot with my iPhone and it worked fine. Did I imagine that? Maybe
this
I had my...
This is a new deal. This is a new announcement. Yes, that was open to all.
Okay.
At that time. This is a new thing.
This is for Android only.
I'm dying to know what the experience is. So if you have your iPhone, you connect to the Wi-Fi network, like what does it say? Like, sorry, get an Android? Like, what does it say? Anything? Does it just say, like, not available?
I haven't encountered it yet.
Somebody tweet me with an image. If you have one, give me a screenshot and we'll show. We'll show and tell.
So it's sponsored by Google Play. So the idea is... get you to buy stuff on Google Play.
Right. So you're not going to use it to surf or anything. You should use it to buy stuff from us.
Are there Google Play specials or discounts? Or
I don't know. That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, stop by this area to get a free app or whatever.
Right.
Well, it was the whole idea that the Times had a big story about Google competing with Amazon. And you said it earlier, Leo, I think in the coverage, that how many credit card numbers you have and thus how many transactions you can enable. Right? And that's the next game.
What was the number? I think Apple had something like 153 million iTunes accounts with one click purchases. That's the power right there.
This is Boingo says anyone accessing the Wi-Fi hotspot will also have access to some free content, although it doesn't specify what that is. So...
YouTube ads.
Yeah, YouTube ads.
Yeah, free.
Well, you know, it could be like watch an episode of your favorite show while you wait for the train.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I thought it was interesting that Google gave an exclusive to Alexis Madrigal in The Atlantic about how it builds its maps because, of course, one of the announcements Apple made today is the emergence of iOS 6 soon. I think the 14th, right? And that will no longer have Google Maps built in. Apple's doing its own map thing. So Alexis Madrigal of The Atlantic gets to see the insides of Ground Truth, the secret program to build the world's most accurate maps by Google. And I think what they're showing is this was absolutely aimed at Apple. How it's not just the data, which everybody could buy. It's how we massage the data. It's how we make it work. They started with data from the U.S. Census Bureau. On first inspection, this data looks great.
The roads look like they're all there, and you've got the freeways differentiated. This is a good map to the untrained eye or Apple computer. But let's look closer. No, I added that. There are issues about where the digital data does not match the physical world, et cetera, et cetera. And so they're talking about how they have this whole building where Google engineers are massaging it. The Google is driving around with custom cameras. Literally, Google has 5 million miles driven for mapping, not just Street View, but the cars are actually driving around to see, you know, if there's a road there.
Amazing the investment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was struck by a couple of things. One is that, this goes back to the Apple announcement, is that what's happened with me is that I'm so addicted to Google services that led me to the hardware. Whereas before, I liked the hardware and it led me to Apple services. And I've switched now.
Ah. Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
Services, right? Apple's not really that good at services. Well, let's be honest. We haven't been down for a day before the announcement, by the way, doesn't help.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think that it's no longer about hardware.
Right. And so that's the funny thing about Amazon as well. Amazon is going to such lengths to de-Googleify the Kindle Fire and Android on it. And that's why I'm not going to buy it. Because a lot of the reason that I like Android is because of the services that I get. So the services lead me to the hardware.
That's
and
true.
Lead me to other things. And I think, you know, I keep on wondering about Marissa, and Marissa understands that too. And I keep on thinking that there's probably going to be something around services and better services with Yahoo too, because that creates a relationship, that creates data about you, that creates value.
It's interesting because Bezos said, we want to make money when you use our products, not when you buy them.
And Zuckerberg said to Arrington, you know, I am not making a phone, Michael, which was hilarious stuff. Absolutely hilarious.
That's the rumor that just will not die.
No, well, Michael keeps on. I actually miss Arrington. I have to say that after watching him do his interviews and watching him with Zuckerberg, I thought it was good.
What is it that he does that you like?
He's just blunt and
Zuckerberg, he doesn't really care. He's not kissing up to Mark Zuckerberg or anybody else.
No, and Zuckerberg still in his natural state is also direct.
Right.
And put the two together, yeah. And I enjoyed the conversation. What did you think of it?
Oh my God, it was a headline after headline.
Yeah.
It's the most forthright I've ever seen Zuckerberg. More so than at All Things D. I mean, he said a lot of stuff. He said, we made a huge mistake betting on HTML5.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you agree with that, by the way?
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody agrees that the HTML5-based app on the iPhone was terrible, and the new app is so much better. Mm-hmm. He also said, we think most of our business is going to come from mobile, and we know how to, you know, we're going to be able to monetize it. I have to say, I did start seeing ads in the iPhone app. I think I did on Facebook.
And the stock is up 7.7% today.
Yeah, he did a good job, didn't he?
Yeah, it moved the stock.
He sold himself. He was disappointed by the stock price. Who wouldn't be? But he says it's not going to hurt his employing people.
He likes being underestimated, which certainly is the case now.
Yeah. You always want to fly under the radar, don't you?
Yeah.
Never good to be the guy in front.
But it was also interesting to me that this attitude toward hardware and software and service and so on and so forth, the difference, right? Apple is selling hardware. And I don't know what that really does to them strategically in the long run, especially when they can't surprise you as they couldn't today.
Right.
Google is going to addict you to its services. Amazon is going to give you good deals on stuff.
Amazon's got an ecosystem, but so does Apple.
So does Apple.
But Apple's always said, and I don't know if this is still true, but for a long time they said, we don't make money on iTunes. It's all about selling hardware. I don't know if that was true or...
I think at the point of the 99 cent songs, and that was pretty much all. Yeah, I probably was true, but now they're selling so much other stuff.
Hmm. It's interesting. I think Amazon. I read a great article. I can't find it. And I don't think it's in our links. Where the guy said the reason Amazon is not so big internationally is Amazon's only interest, because they don't make money on the hardware. They only make money on the store, their only interest is to get Amazon hardware into the hands of the people who use Amazon the most. Those are what those are the people that are going to make the most. If you use it for a browser, you're you're costing them.
Well, there's a dynamic in Germany and France, but for all I know, all of the EU, I don't know, but at least those two countries, you cannot discount books. You're not allowed to buy them all.
Oh, really?
It's to support the bookstores.
Wow, this
is a nation regulation, right? And so that's how Amazon makes its hay, is by giving you great prices by using its efficiency.
Speaking of Facebook, I love this article. The New Yorker has a Facebook page in which they posted, brace yourself if you're watching this at home. This is going to be nippleage. They posted this on Facebook, and it got pulled down because there were nipples. It's a cartoon, Adam and Eve sitting under a tree, and Eve says to Adam, well, it was original. And apparently, they redrew the cartoon with clothes on, but it just really didn't work. It turns out that the dots are the offensive part. Now, Facebook does not block male nipples, only female nipples. So the nipples on top, well, they're not nipples. They're just black dots because it's a cartoon after all. Those are okay. No, I'm sorry. These are the illegal nipples. Those are the okay nipples.
And for those of you listening, it's just two sets of dots.
Two black dots.
That's all it is.
It's like, where's Waldo?
Yeah.
For nipples.
Yeah.
They didn't really put clothes on. Bob had to make clear at the end of the post that no. We did that as a joke.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm trying to make this show family friendly. I don't find this offensive in the least.
No.
But now, by the way, it was reinstated after they complained. But somebody at Facebook said, no. You can't have that. Okay, not okay. Just to be clear. Not okay, okay. Anyway, I don't know. I just thought that was funny. It's not really a big deal. I did think this was maybe not so funny. It turns out that this Google Fiber, by the way, I think that, 98% of Kansas City neighborhoods have now amassed sufficient interest to get Google Fiber. It's like pretty much everybody who could get it's going to get it. But it turns out that even though Fred Campbell, a former FCC official, portrayed the Google Fiber project in Kansas City as a triumph for free markets, once government gets out of the way, deregulation promotes private investment, that in fact, the Google Fiber is getting all sorts of government support, including tax breaks, expedited permitting. City officials actually assigned staff to help Google. One county offered to allow Google to hang wires on its utility poles for free.
All of which I would eagerly support if
absolutely
they would just come here.
Just do it.
All for
yeah.
Free rights of way, central office space,
do it, I'd vote them out.
Power, marketing and direct mail.
Well, this is the microcosm of Obama. Yeah, you didn't make it by yourself.
No.
You always make it in concert.
Yes. And it's good for everybody, including citizens.
Business.
And business. 90% of the eligible neighborhoods, though. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Awesome. Oh, man.
And Google was so smart. They did the thing where you get your neighbors to. So out of the 202 possible neighborhoods, 180 have amassed sufficient interest for Google to install.
And there were campaigns in poorer neighborhoods to make sure that people signed up. So it was a
great
way to get awareness of benefits.
That's great.
It was wonderful.
Actually, Google did a little bit of a push. There were a couple of neighborhoods that looked like they wouldn't get it. And Google, like, I guess, sent volunteers in to canvass. It's like an election. It's really cool. I'm so jealous. I want my Google Fiber.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I should have mentioned this. We were talking about the HTML5 and the lousy Facebook app. It's still HTML5 on Android, but Zuckerberg, among other things, did say, no, we're working on a full-bore Android app as well.
He didn't say when.
Yeah, someday.
And then Zuckerberg says, when it's ready. And I thought, well, that's not the way Facebook operates. It's that often, but some things when they're not ready.
But, yeah, that's true.
Ship it before it's done. That's okay. It's really okay. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, This Week in Google. Coming up shortly, we're a little bit delayed because of the Apple announcement. Our triangulation show. Good, interesting show. Hans-Peter Brandmo is our guest. He is an entrepreneur who was hired. Actually, his company was purchased by Nokia a few years ago, and he's been charged with keeping an entrepreneurial spirit alive inside of Nokia. And we'll talk about Nokia's new phones, its Windows 8 phones, the future of Nokia coming up in our triangulation show. But first, this episode of This Week in Google brought to you by our friends at Ford and their new site, social.ford.com, a great place to go to get your tech geek badge, to learn about Ford vehicles, to share your ideas. I think this is kind of the best modern 21st century suggestion box. Lots of ideas here. You can read the ideas, vote on them. In fact, we could sort by popularity. We could see what the most popular ideas are and the least popular ideas are. Oh, this is a great idea. Have a 110-volt AC outlet in your car. Actually, the Ford Flex has that. But wouldn't it be good in all vehicles to have an AC outlet? Forget the USB thing. Let's do it. So you like that idea? So do 18 other people. Just go on over and vote. Ford's paying attention, I got to tell you. They really want to know what you think. There's also articles there. I've got one I wrote, just a brief one, talking about my conversation with Ford technologist Jim Buczkowski about what's new in sync, what's coming in autonomous vehicles and so forth. There's articles by Bill Ford in there. I credit Alan Mulally a lot with the CEO of Ford with transforming the company, but a lot of credit. Oops, I get a badge. 1902 Ford, $999. Ooh, 93 miles an hour in 1902. Wow. Bill Ford really has led in some interesting ways the company in terms of its environmental initiatives and so forth. So there's some good stuff in here. I like this site, social.ford.com. Take a visit. Grab a badge. There's a Tech Geek badge just for you right over here. And share your interest in Ford with others. And, by the way, don't forget to drive a Ford vehicle at your Ford dealer near you. You might be pleasantly surprised. Some amazing stuff coming from Ford, including that 2012 all-electric Focus. Next year, the 2013 Energy plug-in hybrid, the Fusion. It's going to be awesome. Social.ford.com. We thank them for their support. Let's see. Variety magazine. This is so sad. I just so sad. So Variety, which is like, that was the Hollywood magazine, right?
Oh, it was it.
It was it. It's got to be worth a ton, right?
Yeah.
It's for sale. The price, it's a fire sale. Reed Elsevier can't get anybody to buy Variety. The price is now down to $30 million. That's less than AOL paid for TechCrunch.
Yeah. Oh.
Ouch. Mm. It's not that Variety's got beaten by some other publication. It's that nobody's reading print anymore.
Right. And online, they went behind a paywall when there's tons and tons of competitors.
There's
their field.
Perez Hilton.
Yeah.
That's all you need to say.
It's amazing how quickly a new brand can come along. When I worked at Condé Nast, I, believe it or not, had to work on bridal a lot.
That's great.
It is.
You look good in white. I think it's good.
I want a picture of you with a veil, Jeff. Veil. Somebody has to Photoshop that, please.
I would have to go to many. Whenever I'd go to a bridal meeting, everyone would laugh at me. So when I was there, they owned Brides. We bought Modern Bride. We bought Elegant Bride. We thought, we're it. We got bridal, right? And then did some market research and found out the number one brand in bridal was The Knot.
The Knot.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so
out of nowhere
rebuilt what we did and made it a lot better and so on. But it's possible now for you to leapfrog with new brands. And that's really kind of an interesting thing.
It's great.
And it happened in print. And I think it's next going to happen potentially in mobile. Pew just came out with some more numbers. I don't have them up on the site with continuing. This goes on unabated that African Americans and Hispanics index a lot higher than the white population and the total population in smartphones. Leapfrog opportunity, right? There's a chance to come in behind, and suddenly a new brand can take over a space because the old one is protecting its old space, and that's what happened to Variety.
Do you think it has to happen when a new media arises, that it's not just going to happen in general because we're all into technology and things are moving faster? It's because there was a new medium.
There's an opportunity.
That's what poses the opportunity. Now, first, you have desktop browsing on the internet. Tablets probably are kind of, in addition to smartphones, another new opportunity.
I think mobile apps mobile space will allow a new brand built well for that world to leapfrog. Because somebody, if Facebook didn't get its act together on mobile, could somebody create a new social?
There's the opportunity.
On mobile. Yeah, there is.
Yeah. Do you think that the iPad is mobile? Do you think this? I mean, Zuckerberg did not. It's an interesting debate.
Though I carry around my Nexus 7
really
dorkily in my back pocket.
To me, but mobile means mobile phone, not tablet.
Though my stock tweet ready line is that mobile equals local and local equals around me.
So whatever's around me is mobile.
Is mobile, yeah, because it doesn't matter. The huge proportion of tablet usage is in the home.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I think of tablets as a PC replacement, really.
Yes.
And I think of smartphones as truly mobile, like you're out and about.
Yeah, your phone's always in your pocket. The tablet for me is the living room kitchen computer.
Yeah, it's just another computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Zuckerberg was right when he said the iPad's not a mobile device.
He also said something about TV being closer to mobile being closer to TV than it is to computers.
I don't know that I totally got that. He said that because the ads on TV are much more immersive, that because you can't have ads on the right hand column in mobile, that the ads have
probably
to be
more
in
intrusive
the
to them. Right, that you can't just have the ads just there. You probably have to take over the experience with the ad. Is that it? Maybe.
Or did he mean inserting ads kind of into the stream the way
they're interstitial.
You can't get away from them.
It is the fact that the banner ads and kind of, little things at the bottom of the screen probably don't do much. You want to take over.
Right. And you're surrounding the content versus, right. I don't know if it was interstitial versus in stream ads, like it looks like just part of my news stream and I can, scroll past it just the way I can fast forward commercials. But that's kind of what
you have to trick people.
Well, I don't know that they're a trick. I don't know that they have to take over your whole phone screen, and I think they can show up in your news feed and say like, "Hey, you're right near Chipotle, free burrito," and have it be clearly marked as an ad, but have it be part of your news stream. I like Chipotle; they've got a free burrito thing. I'm right near one. I see it in my news stream.
Well, that's the key. I like Chipotle is where the real value is.
Yes.
Right, the knowledge of you is real value. I kept on thinking about our conversation last week about the American Express stuff and how you guys were using that on Foursquare.
Yeah.
That is really a powerful new way to market.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not about ads. It's about value to you and knowledge about you.
Right. And if I like Chipotle on, I've liked Glee on Facebook. When I keep seeing ads about the, the Glee premiere, I'm like, yeah, I'm stoked. That's advertising I'm much more open to. And I understand why I got it.
Loser demographic, Gina, yes.
Bleak. Twitter, this is interesting because this is not a search warrant or not a subpoena. Twitter has been ordered to release information, deleted tweets, and so forth about a protester in the Occupy Wall Street movement or be fined by the court. This is a 2703 order, which is a request for information, but allows prosecutors to get information without a warrant. It's more powerful than a subpoena, but not as strong as a search warrant. The order is supposed to be issued when prosecutors provide a judge with specific and articulable facts that show the information is relevant and material to a criminal investigation. Twitter says they move to quash. They said, they're not going to give you the information. Judge Chiarino ordered Twitter to release the tweets and account information, ruling that the defendant
had no expectation of privacy when he published tweets. Quote, if you post a tweet, just like if you scream it out the window, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy. There's no proprietary interest in your tweets. You have now gifted them to the world.
To that extent, I think that's true. But what I learned about this case is that there are things that they're asking for that are not public.
And well, they didn't ask for direct messages, and the judge said, no, those would require a warrant based on probable cause.
They asked for data like time and place and things that wouldn't necessarily be public. And, yeah, I could shout out the window, but if no one heard me and it goes off in the ether, then that's my good luck.
Right.
So if I kill the tweet and no one else recorded it except Twitter, is Twitter required to dime its users? And let's remember Yahoo and a man just got out of prison after a full decade. He spent in prison in China.
But that was his mail. That was.
But this is communication.
Yeah.
Right? This is communication. And so I agree with the judge that when something is public, it's public. Because anybody can hear that. Anybody can record that. Anybody can pass that on. And that's what you did. And that's what it is. But what Twitter, I think, is saying here and trying to you know, save itself as a platform for us is that they're asking for the next layer there.
Right. Mm. The court ordered Twitter to release the data or hand over its confidential earnings statements from the last two quarters so they could determine how much of a fine to levy against Twitter. They have till September 14th. Twitter said Twitter users own their tweets and should have the right to fight invalid government requests.
There's the key. And that's where AMAC, you know, I have my problems lately with Twitter, but that's really important doctrine.
And good for them.
We need protection of our communication, not just the U.S. mail. That's a principle that should be carried to the new world and figure out how we enforce it there. And as I said, I'm not totally against the ruling on what's public part, but there is a line. We gotta figure out what that line is, and it's not what the judge is saying, I don't think. I mean, Gina, so let's say that Twitter changed its retention policy and erased the tweets, right? When I was on online sites, we tried to retain data as briefly as possible just because we didn't want to get subpoenaed all the time. So let's say that Twitter decided, oh, screw it, let's erase it. But you, of course, are a retention vehicle. And so the judge comes to you.
Don't tell anybody.
Hand it over, lady. What do you do? What do you say? What's your principle? What's your argument?
Well, so this is the reason why we built ThinkUp, which captures tweets, as a decentralized app that you install on your own service. Like I'm not retaining everyone's tweets. You install it on your own server. You got your own copy, just the way that you, you know, you auth on your Twitter client on your phone. I mean, there's a cache copy of your tweets on your phone as well. Every device that you look at your tweets on, there's a cache copy somewhere on that device. But this is one of the main reasons why ThinkUp is a decentralized app.
You thought about it already.
This is about control.
And I think we'd all agree that tweets are public, but remember that the government's asking for any information Twitter had about the owner of the account, the username, email address, IP addresses used to access the account to post the tweets. So it's more than just the public stuff.
Yeah, yes. and that's not anything that ThinkUp or any other app can get. You know, you can't get IP addresses or email addresses. Through the API.
So I'm not sure if Twitter, which part Twitter's fighting. If they're saying, hey, we're not going to give you the private stuff, we'll give you, but it seems to me that the tweets are public. They were shouted from the rooftops. So I don't think they are protected.
They could be in Google's cache, right?
Yes.
I don't think they're protected.
No, I don't think so either.
But I do admire Twitter for fighting the good fight. Speaking of which, I guess Forbes had a profile of Ev Williams and Biz Stone, the creators of Twitter. What are the Twitter founders up to now? Not so obvious. It's a little play on the fact that the name of the company is obvious. Actually, it's actually obvious. So Biz Stone stepped down from Twitter and started Obvious back up. Interesting.
Right, that was the name of their company back in the day.
Yeah, they did Odeo and then pivoted to Twitter.
Yep, and then they just launched Medium.
Oh, yeah, Medium. That's what it is. I was trying to remember what they're doing.
That's what they're working on.
I've got a little squib on Medium.
Is it medium.com?
Yep.
Yep.
And you're on that, right?
I wrote one. I mean, write another one. It's an elegantly done interface.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You auth through Twitter.
Oh, but you have to get an invite. It's beta.
You do. Yeah. But Ev will get you in.
No, Ev won't do anything for me. He's just another person I've pissed off. That's.
I want to ask.
No, I know. I don't know. I don't. Maybe I didn't piss him off. He just never calls. He never writes.
He never writes. He doesn't. No.
I think that's it. I don't see anything else that we should talk about.
Oh, we have Jeff and Avail.
We have Jeff and Avail already?
Chat room, yeah.
You guys are too good. Uncle Bic?
Good job, Uncle Bic.
Oh, that's scary. That is scary, scary, scary.
Bride of Frankenstein.
That's quite a dress.
Quick and dirty.
Nice. I rather like it, don't you think?
You got nice hips.
My décolletage is rather appealing.
Yes. I guess it's Vic Loven who did that originally.
Getcha.
Sorry. I think we
have a show title, too. Jeff and a Dress. let us get your tip of the week, Gina Trapani.
Yeah, we actually didn't talk about the new YouTube app for iOS.
Shh, that's going to be my tool.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so I won't talk about that. The new Google Drive.
I should write that in.
Google Drives has a new update for both Android and iOS. On iOS, the Google Drive app, you can now edit documents. On your iPhone or iPad. And the Android app, I think, got a comment. So it's a small incremental update, but nice updates both
we
ways.
We needed it.
We're seeing a few Google apps landing on iOS with iOS 6 coming out on September 19th, which is next week. Hey. And also, I have a quick shameless plug. Speaking of ThinkUp, we got a new URL, just thinkup.com.
Ooh.
Really easy to remember.
Did you have to buy that?
We did. It was
Somebody
not cheap.
Had it.
And we brand new release this week, version 1.1 support now supports Foursquare. So we have Twitter, Facebook, Foursquare, and Google+ support. So you can capture your posts and visualize them and map them. And the Foursquare plugin is really cool. One of our contributors, Aaron, wrote it, maps your tweets, sees your check-ins over time, sees, time machine check-ins from past years. So check it out, thinkup.com.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Talk to me.
What the hell? So in the open source, I don't know if I can pause this image. Is that an octopus cat? What is that? Wait a minute.
That's Octocat. Octocat is GitHub's.
Oh, it's GitHub.
Yeah, it's GitHub's mascot. Yeah.
There it is. Octocat.
Yeah, that's Octocat.
So it's a cat with a human face and a wet tail with suckers on it. That was just confusing me.
Exactly. It's an octopus with a cat face. It's GitHub's logo. So
good.
I'm going to have nightmares tonight.
I love it. I love it.
Octocat is awesome.
ThinkUp.com. No more ThinkUpApp.com. ThinkUp.com. That's great. New release. It's free, right?
It is free. Absolutely free. And we have a super easy installer for PHP Fog and for Amazon EC2. Good. So it's one click. You can just spin up an instance. It's really painless if you don't have your own web server.
Good. I want to do this because I want to add Foursquare and Google+ and Facebook.
Awesome.
Yeah, and just collect everything. So what is the business model?
For ThinkUp?
Yeah.
Well, we're working on it at the moment. But there's opportunities for affiliate fees from cloud providers. We're working on our 2.0 release right now, we're going to have in the beta channel in the next few weeks, which is going to be less Google Analytics charts and more of kind of an insight stream of things going on with your tweets that are interesting. And there's some opportunities for discovering interesting content across networks that way. So there could be, a premium service that you buy to install. It could be advertising. We're still working it out. Right now, we're just focusing on making a really good product that's compelling. And it's more like a Google Analytics dashboard. You set it up, you look at it, you're like, cool charts, and then you don't look at it again. We're working on kind of an insight stream that's going to be a lot more compelling and interesting kind of day-to-day.
So just for people who want to know what it looks like, here's my ThinkUp stream, and here's the activity, and
followers, by date. Whoops. I hate that feature of Chrome where you accidentally scroll to a previous page. Anyway, that just did that. And you get tweets, you get followers. Oh, this is fun. Who you follow is good, and get more information about them.
Yeah, so that's our first. That's this 1.0 version.
This is I know. I got to update
version,
it.
Right.
I got to update it. This hasn't been updated in months. I'm a bad man.
I think I have an installation for you, Leo, and you too, Jeff. I'll email it to you.
Oh, good.
That would be keeping up to date. Ooh. Yeah, because I would love to have you preview the new beta.
It's good.
I love that.
It's really
love
cool.
That. Thank
love
you.
It.
Sure.
Your number of the week, Mr. Jarvis.
Well, so we know that Google was predicting flu by being able to look at the search results or search requests that people made. And that's been the case for a while, to the point that Google executives and founders have used that as the reason to argue to governments that they shouldn't be forced to erase data, that looking at the changes and deltas in data can make a difference. Well, now, obviously, I'm surprised I haven't seen more of this. A researcher at University of Rochester, Adam Sedilek, analyzed 4.4 million tweets and found that he could predict up to 8 days in advance with 90% accuracy when healthy people would start getting sick.
But how does he know? What is it? Somebody says, oh, my head.
Well, they probably use the word flu, and he's doing geographic analysis of that. So, how would he know ahead of time?
Because they're not sick yet.
But it spreads. It's going from one place to the next. So he's looking at the
heat
what
map.
Do you call it?
Yeah.
Vectors.
Wow. Vectors. That is really cool. That is really cool. There's also a web application called Fount.in that gives you health insights in real time. Analyze health at scale through AI. Wow. Wow, that's really neat.
There's value in all of our data. And
data, big data, baby. My app, yes, you already know, is the new YouTube for iOS. Google needed to do this because Apple pulled the YouTube app from iOS 6. I think it's a lot better, frankly. And, you know, it needed to be updated. I've logged in, so this is from my account, so it's showing stuff that are in my feeds and people I follow and so forth. That's kind of handy, too, because, you know, I follow Jerry Ellsworth, so I've subscribed to her. And we're going to start taking advantage of this, by the way. We're going to have our own Twig channel. We're going to have our own channel for all of Twitch shows so that people can follow Twig. And then if you're using the YouTube app, it'll show up right here inside your channels that you're following. And there's also, you know, from YouTube, the popular channel. So you can see Demi Lovato gets owned by Next Factory. Steam's Brittany learns. Oh, this should be good.
Oh boy!
Britney Spears learns how to dance Gangnam Style. I'm gonna watch that while. Anyway, that's the new YouTube app. It's this is actually an iPhone app, which we're demonstrating on an iPad. But you know, it blows up fine on the iPad as well. Let me just jump ahead and see if she's gonna learn how to dance Gangnam Style. Oh my gosh, it's Psy. Oh, there he is. Wow, you know, you miss one day of Ellen and you miss so much. Thank goodness for YouTube. Well, we'll just save that for an exercise for later. Father Robert Ballasser, now on Ellen. Okay, how do I stop it? Stop. Because I know everybody's now rushing to YouTube and they've forgotten about this show. Thank you, Gina Trapani. Congratulations. ThinkUp.com, the new website.
Gina, thank you very much.
Blogs at smarterware.org. And it's always good to have you on the show. We appreciate
it. Great show today. Worth the wait.
Sorry we ran a little bit late with that stupid iPhone.
It was fun, but I loved watching your coverage as it went.
Thank you. Did you like the puppet show?
It was really good.
Jury was out on the puppet show.
Well, you got to have Sarah Puppet. Sarah Puppet and Cook Puppet.
Sarah was so unhappy.
The Cook Puppet was great. I'm going to side with Sarah on everything else, but the Cook Puppet.
Cook Puppet was okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. Oh, but you got to do a Sarah Puppet now. You have to have a war of puppets.
That is Jeff Jarvis, Sarah Lane. Jeff Jarvis. He is the author of What Would Google Do and his latest public parts. He's also a blogger at BuzzMachine.com.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google normally on Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2000 UTC on twit.tv, but you get on-demand audio and video after the fact, like all our shows at twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/twig, or on YouTube, soon to have our very own YouTube channel, but right now it's youtube.com/twit. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on Twig.